across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network 706 on this Thursday morning, September 5th. Nice to have you here as we get set to get the weekend started a little bit early here, as we always like to do on Thursdays. But we're not just starting the weekend early, we're starting the football season early. As we know, the Badgers already have things underway. The NFL begins tonight. Packers tomorrow in Brazil. We'll talk to Riley Kleist about the WIAC getting football going. All of the UW schools, Stout, Eau Claire, Whitewater, Oshkosh. And they're taking on opponents that are not exactly household names. How do you prep for something like that? We'll talk to Riley about that in a little bit. At the bottom of the hour, we have our Motherhood for Good segment called Women Win Wisconsin. And we will talk to Assembly candidate Angela Stroud, who was playing a role helping save Northland College up in the Ashland area. So we'll talk about her candidacy for a seat in the legislature. And we'll ask our Motherhood for Good friends a bit about that clip we just played before the news. The word salad coming out of J.D. Vance's talking hole about how would you solve the daycare problem, which to J.D. Vance, like, you know, grandma and grandpa pitch in. Problem solved. Next question. That did not sit well with Kate Duffy and her friends there at Motherhood for Good. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Luke Mathers will join us too. But first, meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here. As thunderstorms continue to move through basically an area, you know, from Minocqua down to Alma, basically on the Mississippi. And, you know, there's some reds and yellows in that radar image there, Brittany. So we're getting some heavier rain at times, too, from a big system. It goes from, like, Nebraska to Hudson Bay. This is no tiny little rainmaker.
No, it's not. But we're actually not going to see any severe weather. We're not looking at any dangerous storms. So for us, it's kind of like a little tiny rainmaker in a sense. We are looking at totals, though, anywhere from about a quarter of an inch into Ladysmith all the way to 3/4 of an inch into Ashland. So anywhere less than an inch is kind of what we're looking at as this system moves through. So what is it? It's a cold front, all right? So that is why these showers and storms are sparking up more in a line, but it is a widespread line that is slowly moving, which is allowing that rain to total up a little faster there. So as it slowly works its way southeast, you guys right now down south are seeing a ton of sunshine, clear skies off by Lake Michigan as well, while there's a lot of cloud cover still hanging on northwest. So as we go through the day, those showers are going to be working their way south, arriving there by the afternoon, mainly after about 2 or 3 o'clock or so. And that is when it is going to start to wind down a little bit more into the north. Now, there still is chances for spotty showers or some scattered storms overnight tonight and through tomorrow, as this system, like Pat mentioned, is pretty big, still lingers over the area. And what's going to be happening is today, those winds are going to shift to out of the south, which are warming us up to near 80 degrees in southern parts of the state. They're going to be switching to out of the north, which is why the north is barely going to make it to about 70 degrees today. So a big temperature difference statewide. And by tomorrow, we're all going to be feeling like fall into the low to mid 60s.
Including the prospect for frost way up north.
Yes, tomorrow night, and then again Saturday night, we are looking at cold.
How are we using the F word already? We don't need frost advisories in this yet. I'm sorry, let me put my finger to my ear here. I'm sorry, I'm being told by the control room we have a breaking weather update from downtown Waukesha. Here's special Waukesha weather correspondent Craig Bach. Craig.
So before we got in the air, Pat was talking about how it was raining up there, and I was looking out, it was pretty dark, and I was trying to be all meteorologically cool, and I'm like, yeah, I'm looking at the clouds right now, I'm looking at the sky right now, it's pretty overcast, probably going to get some rain. No, it is sunshiny and not a cloud in sight. I will never do your job, Brittany.
At least you admitted it. It's hard, isn't it? Anything can happen.
Of course it's hard. Like, I've said it with the confidence of a man. I was like, was like, yeah, we're going to get some storms coming through here. It seems pretty cloudy right now. You better.
I thought it was a little odd because it was, you know, the storm line is so far from Waukesha. But I thought, well, maybe he's seeing the clouds developing ahead of it. But
the answer to that, Pat, is no. No, I wasn't.
Yeah, the answer is
and
no.
And I will stick to my knowledge of Metallica and 60s radio music. So that's it.
Hey, there we go. You know what? You're by the lake. It does some weird things, so it's all right.
That's there. That we're going to blame
Thanks,
the lake.
Brittany.
Yes. You're welcome.
It's raining in Ashland up on the lake there, which, of course, is now casting, not forecasting, as Tony points out on YouTube. And from Rob, good morning from Tigerton. Sunny and 55, starting to cloud up. Mowed lawns in Tigerton. Brittany did a great story on the oak rot on Bull Falls Radio. With many leaves coming down early, mowed up a lot of leaves since July. So oak rot was your story about it like spreading or that it's just arriving in areas?
Yeah, it's actually spreading further north. You know, it was starting to be seen further north, but they were trying to, you know, keep it into smaller areas. And now it's just spreading so rapidly that they can't. So a lot of trees are just shedding their leaves within 4 to 6 weeks rapidly up here now. And it's becoming a bigger problem. I mean, I know that further south in the state it already was, but up north, not so much.
Okay. No, appreciate that info. But you know what? For that extra bit of information, why don't you take tomorrow off?
Oh, yay. Thank you. You know,
I think you get the weekend started early, okay? Never mind that was her plan already. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good. Have a good one, guys.
All right. Take care. Just about 7:13 now on this Thursday, September 5th, where the Milwaukee Brewers once again could not quite get it done in extra innings against the St. Louis Cardinals. It only went to 10 innings this time, with the Cardinals beating the Brewers 3-2. That's going to happen when you have a team like Milwaukee last night with runners in scoring position and the team going 0-15. 0-for is never a good thing with runners in scoring position. 0-15, really not good. The Cardinals pulled ahead early. Colin Ray, starting pitcher for Milwaukee, had some very uncharacteristic control problems. Ray hadn't walked anybody in 4 straight starts. He had issued just 1 walk the entire month of August. But in the first inning, he loaded up the bases, and then there was a bases-loaded walk that scored the first Cardinal run, and a bases-loaded walk that scored the second Cardinal run, and that was really pretty much all they needed to win in extras. The Brewers have today off, but they stay home with 3 games against the Colorado Rockies. Starting tomorrow, with that game time moved up, first pitch is at 5:10 because of the Packer season opener. An extremely rare Friday night game that will be played in Brazil, and you can only see it on Peacock. So maybe instead of watching that particular Packer game, because it'll be Friday night, maybe you'll go see a high school football game. Or maybe either tonight for some schools or Saturday for the others, you'll watch one of the other local colleges playing football in the WIAC and elsewhere. Our friend Riley Kleist, part of the UW Stout football coaching staff, joins us to kind of help us do a little season preview. Riley, good to see you again. How are you?
I'm Dandy. How are you?
Well, you ought to be Dandy. It's game day, right?
Heck yeah.
Okay. Fired up and ready to go here as Stout gets set to take on Carroll University, a Presbyterian church-affiliated little school in Waukesha County. According to the website here, Go Pios, which I guess is short for Pioneers. So I don't suppose you're supposed to know those things like all the team mascots, right?
I mean, you see their logo and haven't ever faced him in my time there, and I don't think our head coach has ever faced him, and he's been there for this is 18th season, so an unfamiliar opponent for us.
Well, I mean, Carroll College is part of the feared college conference of Illinois and Wisconsin. I mean, you've got your Big Ten, you've got your SEC, and then you've got the CCIW. You can see how you know you have to know who all these schools are. But honestly, Riley, this just gets into the whole notion of small schools that we'll talk about later and how you plan for these opponents. But let's stick to your own prep, your own team there at Stout. We talked to you very early in the summer about, you know, what does a college football team go through, you know, during the off season like this. So what you've been up to lately, getting ready for the season opener here?
Yeah, so for the last few weeks, we've been deep in fall camp, and it's just installing, at least in the offensive of the ball, we're reteaching the entire offense from square one just to make sure everyone's on the same page and everyone comes back and fresh for the season. The biggest thing with fall camp is, you know, one, get the knowledge out to the guys, but also keep each other healthy, you know. Especially in the WIAC, you cannot win games shorthanded. So we're trying to stay healthy, stay up, and make it to week one alive, really.
I was, you know, when you talk about the injuries and things, it makes me wonder the roster size in Division III versus, you know, the big Division I schools. Are they similar? Is there a big difference?
So to my knowledge, I think you can roster as many individuals as you would like. Mm-hmm. And you can only travel 60 players suited up for a game. So we get a couple busloads of dudes to games.
Yes, you do. So you will be hosting the season opener. So that's got to feel pretty good, not having to go on the road right away.
Yeah. So the last two seasons, we've been on the road for week one, and we've been on the road for the last game of the season. This year, it's pretty nice. We're at home for week one and at home for the closer. So yeah, it's always good to play and against or with your fans behind you instead of the other team hollering at you. So
yeah. And how would you rate that Stout student base, that fan base out there in Menominee?
Man, if you want to see an awesome environment, pull up to when Eau Claire comes to Stout. It is electric. It is so much fun. It's really weather dependent. So if the weather is good, we're gonna have a big turnout. If the weather gets bad, like 2 years ago, we played Whitewater at home, and it was kind of an overcast, drizzly, rainy day. And you know, fans few and far between. But if you get good weather and it's a conference game, people will show up, and it is rocking.
That's great because it's always nice when it's not just, you know, parents and family, but you actually have fans in the stands for college or for your local high school football games as well. So we're going to take a pause here. And when we come back, Riley and I are going to talk more about the WIAC and where all the schools are playing this weekend. Get his thoughts on the Badgers opening their season last week against Western Michigan. And maybe Riley's got an early Packer prediction for the season opener that gets going tomorrow. Then at the bottom of the hour, we'll have our Motherhood for Good segment. Our Women Win Wisconsin segment, powered by our friends at Motherhood for Good, as we meet Angela Stroud, assembly candidate from the Ashland area. And Luke Mathers will join us yet before things wrap up on this Thursday morning, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin. When you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit. Are looking live at not Brent Musburger, and that's certainly not Phyllis George over there. It's Pat Kreitlow, it's Riley Kleist, and we're talking about the kickoff of the football season here on Up North News Radio, 7:20 the time right now on this Thursday. Riley's part of the UW Stout coaching staff, getting ready to open up the season at home against Carroll University. We've already determined that they are the Pios for the Pioneers here. Riley, we're going to go through the other schools here in kind of in the form of a pop quiz, which you could guess about as well as Greg or I could. And Greg, you'd jump in if you have any guesses as well. We've already talked about how UW Lacrosse also kicks off the season this evening against, if I'm saying this right, the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute of New York. Any idea what kind of a football team Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute has?
Not a clue.
No, can't really prep for that, can you?
No, you can't. Not unless you got their film.
Well, I mean, they're in New York. Maybe they've got some Eastman Kodak film that you can check out. So all the other games kick off on Saturday. Let's go. Stevens Point is at Albion College of Michigan. Do we know the mascot for Albion College?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea.
Oh, well, good. Get used to saying that because we're going through the whole thing here. It's the Albion College Britons.
Oh.
How could you forget the Fighting Britons?
Yeah.
UW River Falls is at Alma College of Michigan. Alma College, of course, home of the... I'm torturing you at this point. The Scots.
You really are.
Yeah, we had the Albion Britons and the Alma Scots. So can the Welshman be far behind? UW-Eau Claire travels up toward Fargo to play the Concordia Moorhead Cobbers.
I didn't know that okay. one. I didn't know that one.
Oh, I'm sorry. See, now I would have paused for dramatic effect here, but you had the Cobbers. All
it's
right.
Okay.
That's okay. I'm betting you don't got these next two. Oshkosh hosts Wheaton College of Illinois.
I think they're like their logo is like a storm cloud or something.
The Wheaton Thunder. Very good. All right. There you go.
All right, I'm dropping out on this one. Bye, everybody.
Hey, wait, no, you had Rensselaer Polytechnic. You at least had the good sense to look it up.
Yeah.
They actually do have a team name.
The Red Hawks, which I was very, I don't know. I would figure with a name like Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, they'd be like the coders or the motherboards or something. But no,
the Red Hawks. All right. Yeah, that is a bit of a letdown here. Let's see. Whitewater hosts John Carroll University of Ohio. They, of course, would be the Blue Streaks.
Okay.
Which, I mean, those jokes write themselves. And then finally, you might have this one. Platteville hosts Lakeland.
Oh, they're the Muskies.
The Muskies, exactly. The Fighting Muskies. There we go. Any thoughts on the Badgers' performance against Western Michigan? Oh, wait. First, let's finish that pop quiz. Do we remember the name of the Western Michigan team?
Broncos.
Oh, there you go. Broncos. Any thoughts on that game, which I did not watch, but I saw a lot of comments from... shall we say sports experts, and by sports experts I mean commenters on social media, who were not terribly impressed with the Badgers opening performance against Western Michigan.
Yeah, so I really, really love the Luke Fickell hire going into last year. If you can win at Cincinnati and build a great program there and get them to the college football playoffs, the Big Ten's tough, but Badger football, I believe that they could be something under Fickell. Last year they were trying to spread it out really utilizing his air raid system. When I was watching clips and highlights and a little bit of the first quarter, I liked how they're living in 11 personnel. They had multi-back sets. They were trying to run the football more. So I liked that they, you know, college football, every program has their roots, right? And Badger football, you're ground and pound, you're mean in the trenches, you're great in the box. So it's nice to see a running game that was being utilized and leaned on, so that was good. I have really no, and it's also week one. Like, yeah, Western Michigan, they're not going to win, you know, they're not going out to beat Georgia at any point, you know. Mm-hmm. They have Ohio coming up next week or this upcoming weekend, so hold your breath. It's week one. A lot of times you're not showing your full deck in week one because you're more concerned about your conference opponents you have coming up. So I don't want to say you purposely make yourself play shorthanded, but you're not exactly giving it. You're still trying to win the game, obviously, but you're not game planning for success the same way you would against a conference opponent. You know?
So with that said, would you, if they asked you for free advice, would you suggest that they be doing anything differently or doing better compared to their season opener?
I have no place to be giving Division I coaches any sort of advice.
Well, of course not, except for this show. This is the only place where somebody is going to say, hey, what would you tell the Badgers to do? And so as the casual fan, is there any one thing you'd like to see more or less of?
I believe that sticking to a good run game can only help you. And I'm always a fan of having tight ends and fullbacks in the field. So living in 11 personnel and still trying to sling it around and get it to those guys too, I'm all for that.
All right. Well, then that takes us to the NFL and the Packers kicking off the season in Brazil. Do not look for updates on Twitter, folks, because the Brazilian government has banned Twitter. It might have something to do with all the Nazis they let on the platform. I don't know. But just consider that you should get your updates elsewhere. A lot of Packer fans down there will not be able to post updates the way that they maybe thought that they would. So for folks who are going to be watching either on Peacock or in some other fashion, what do you think we're going to see out of the Packers? Is it, again, because the game is thousands of miles away? Is this something where, too, it's almost a preseason game and we won't see everything that that the Packers have to offer?
I think the Eagles will look different this year without Jason Kelce. I think that a lot of their offense and line calls and their offensive calls in general relied on him being able to decipher things and him making decisions. And now it's on Jalen Hurts. So is that going to be better or worse? time will tell on that one. So the Eagles at the end of last year, they kind of had a little bit of a collapse going into the playoffs. So have they rebounded from that? Not sure. The head coach of the Eagles is a former Division III wide receiver at Mount Union in Ohio. And then on the Green Bay side of the world, I'm a Jordan Love supporter and I'm a Jordan Love fan, and I think he's going to go on to do great things. But I don't want the Packer faithful to get on him if he struggles in week one. It's always hard coming off that first year, and there's always a sophomore slump, and he's just going to hit his, and not going to hit his for the full year. But I believe that if some things look a little rough and not as smooth, you know, just stay calm. It's just week one. There's a long season ahead of him. So if Jordan Love struggles a little bit week one, don't be too hard on him. But if he balls out, that's great. But I have a gut feeling there's going to be a little bit of a slow start from him. And I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. But I just think that teams have a full year of film on him now, and they know kind of how he likes to play football and how he utilizes the Packers' offense. So if the Eagles have him schemed up pretty good, just give him some time, we'll be okay.
Well, I think you just need to look across the field there. Jalen Hurts, who, again, you know, looked dynamite until other teams figured him out. And, you know, what it does, it just brings you back down to reality. Now you're, you know, like every other quarterback, you just got to, you know, forgive the cliche, but just win the one game at a time and don't worry about setting the world on fire. But I do like, in a decidedly non-football closing note to this, that both Jordan Love and Jalen Hurts are depicted in a new mural on the side of a downtown building in Sao Paulo, a 108-foot high mural. That's a, you know, for all the money they're getting for the NFL contracts and the fame, to be on the side of a 100-foot high mural on the side of a building in Brazil, you know, that's got to help out your little pregame motivation, if nothing else. So we're looking forward to a good game, looking forward to a good season for the NFL, for the WIAC, for the high schools. Riley, thanks so much for helping us get up to speed on all these. Have a great weekend and good luck on the season.
Yeah, thank you. See you next time.
All right, we'll see you soon. And again, our Women Win Wisconsin segment, powered by Motherhood for Good, is next. Our Women Win Wisconsin segment, powered by our friends from Motherhood for Good, is next. But first, as we play a little Keb Mo here, a little note from the Journal Sentinel this morning from Chris Foran, saying that the Grammy-winning singer and musician has postponed his fall tour with Sean Colvin, which included a September 15th concert at the Bradley Symphony Center in Milwaukee, as he recuperates from open heart surgery. He says that he went in for shortness of breath, thinking that he was having a lung problem, only to find out his heart was giving him trouble, a leaky valve, he wrote on a Facebook post yesterday. Due to the location of the leak, the fix was open heart surgery. While this was a serious procedure, my prognosis is incredibly positive, and I'm doing well, wrote the 72-year-old Keb Mo. So we wish him all the best and hopefully can resume his concert tour before too much longer. Also in the Milwaukee area yesterday, specifically in Tulsa, there was a roundtable event put on by our friends at Motherhood for Good. And so Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin join us right now, along with their special guest, Assembly candidate Angela Stroud. We'll talk about Angela's candidacy in just a moment here. Kate, Nicole, good morning. How did the roundtable event go yesterday?
Good morning. It went great. There was just some women that were pulled together from around the state. Many of them were in Robin Vining's district, who was there moderating the panel. She's in the state assembly, if you're not familiar with Robin. And with everything coming up, obviously, you know, there's new stories every week about attacks on reproductive rights for women, but especially on the heels of last week, Trump saying that he was going to pay for IVF for everybody, going rogue on that, which, you know, I'm sure he has no idea actually how much it costs or didn't before he said that, brought together some women to talk about their very personal experiences with infertility and IVF, and it was really powerful.
Yeah, Nicole, to put it mildly, there are some doubts about the sincerity of Donald Trump saying, again, somebody that wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act, wants to get government out of helping people with healthcare costs, now suddenly saying, oh, government or insurance should pay for all of IVF. I think there's a trust issue here.
It's really weird. It's almost as if like he changes with the wind based on what will help him most. I don't know. Yeah. I kind of find it hard to believe it.
It is. You can learn much more about Motherhood for Good over at motherhoodforgood.com or better yet, on their Instagram page. Just search for Motherhood for Good, where the latest video on there, I swear to God, Kate, I don't know how you do this sometimes. Sometimes it's just all you need is a moment of honesty. And if you're doing something for a site called Motherhood for Good, sometimes you just need a tired mom looking at the camera and saying, are you kidding me? So, Kate, we're going to play what J.D. Vance had to say about the childcare crisis. And then we're going to, instead of playing your video, we're going to get your reaction. We're keep the mics open while J.D. Vance talks. So feel free to talk over him. And then we'll get your reaction. And then we'll turn all this to Angela Stroud, our guest. Here's J.D. Vance being asked by Charlie Kirk about how to fix the childcare crisis. This answer is so amazingly simple from a very simple man like J.D. Vance. Hit it, Greg.
What can we do about lowering the cost of daycare? Hayden, obviously a working family, and it's very hard for working families to get by. How will we lower the cost of daycare?
Yeah, such an important question, Charlie. And I think one of the things that we can do is make it easier for family models to choose, or for families to choose whatever model they want, right? So one of the ways that you might be able to relieve a little bit of pressure on people who are paying so much for daycare is make it so that you know, maybe like grandma or grandpa wants to help out a little bit more. Or maybe there's an aunt or uncle that wants to help out a little bit more. If that happens, you relieve some of the pressure on all the resources that we're spending in daycare. Now,
if you
talk about just daycare, let's say you don't have somebody who can provide that extra set of hands. What we've got to do is actually empower people to get trained in the skills that they need for the 21st century. We've got a lot of people who love kids, who would love to take care of kids, but they can't either because they don't have access to the education that they need, or maybe more importantly, because the state government says you're not allowed to take care of children unless you have some ridiculous certification that has nothing to do. Nothing to do with taking care of kids.
So nothing at all.
Empower people to get the skills they need. Don't force every early child care specialist to go and get a 6-year college degree where they've got a whole lot of debt and Americans are much poorer because they're paying out the wazoo for daycare. Empower working families. Empower people
who do these
things for a living. And that's what we got to do.
Empower.
If he says empower enough times, he might start to believe it himself. That might be the strategy there. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist.
So brilliant. And so you come out of this and you're just looking at the camera with words I can't say on the radio along the lines of, are you kidding me? Colleen writes in on Facebook, Kate, this video, I love your comment. He's giving never changed a diaper energy. J.D. Vance, change the diaper, please, please. I mean, look, there's nobody requiring a 6-year degree. What we're requiring, Nicole, is maybe not poverty wages.
Just maybe pay them a living wage. Right. Like, we don't need to overcomplicate this. Just pay them a living wage.
and the rules, those state government rules, as Tony writes on YouTube, I can't believe they won't let people who aren't allowed within 100 feet of a school open a daycare. What's with these rules, you know?
So, all that bureaucracy. Yeah.
So, Kate, thank you for the brutal honesty of that video and helping us understand that some people do not understand what parents and providers are facing.
Funny, it's like he doesn't understand daycare, but really what it's giving is he doesn't understand the economy. And that's what the Republicans are supposed to be here for. They don't understand the actual middle class working American economy. So if that's you, which it is most of us, that's not your party. And it's time to start listening a little more and maybe coming over.
Yeah. And maybe if you're living up north and you're looking at those new district lines for the assembly, you take a look at what's happening in the 73rd. And that takes us to our guest, Angela Stroud, who we've talked to previously about things happening at Northland College, but is now here as an assembly candidate. Nicole or Kate, you want to give us a proper intro to Angela here?
Yes, we're so excited to have Angela Stroud on running for the 73rd Assembly District. And it's always wonderful to hear what's happening up in up with our friends in the northern part of the state by Superior. So welcome, Angela.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you here. Her website is Stroud for Wisconsin. That's Stroudfor, stroudforwisconsin.com. You can look up Angela Stroud for Assembly on Facebook as well. So, Angela, tell us a bit about the district up there, because the lines have shifted.
Yeah, all new maps this year create a great opportunity statewide for us to win way more seats in the assembly. But my district, the 73rd, now runs Superior to Bad River. It's the Lake Superior watershed district. And it's a real opportunity for us to get strong, progressive representation. This is a very blue part of the state. You know, we hear so often about how rural spaces are all red, and that's just not true in Wisconsin. It's definitely not true in the 73rd. We have a strong tradition of great Democratic leadership up here, but gerrymandering over the last few cycles has really cut people out. And so there's so much enthusiasm and excitement about having a progressive representing this area again, and I'm super excited to be a part of it.
I would go so far as to use the word, and I've used this for over a decade now, diabolical is what those gerrymandered maps looked like. Everybody knows that the areas around Madison, Milwaukee, Eau Claire, other large cities are blue. They may not know that way up in northwest Wisconsin, Superior to Ashland, Bayfield, also solidly Democratic. But Republicans carved up the map a decade ago in such a way that there were zero Democratic assembly reps or senators in an area that is heavily Democratic because of the way they draw the line to put in much more rural area. So the district now is no longer that rigged, but I would dare hasten to add that doesn't mean you take a district like that for granted.
Not at all. We have no idea what the top of the ticket's going to do for turnout, for example, but also I don't think you can ever take voters for granted. I think we've learned lessons of doing that in the past. And I'm out there knocking doors, getting to meet as many people as possible, not only because I want to win the election, but because that's how you work effectively as a representative. I mean, that's how you hear from actual people about, for example, their childcare constraints. And you learn, for example, that many grandparents are already raising their grandchildren because of the opioid crisis. So there's no grandparents, J.D. Vance may not know this, to turn to because they're actually the ones raising the kids, because we have so broken so many rural communities. And so it's talking to people that allows you to learn what the real concerns of working and middle-class people are. And that's what I do every single day. And it's an incredible job. I mean, I'm loving it.
Well, and you have like probably one of the most beautiful parts of the state, right? So that doesn't hurt, I'm sure, when you're out knocking on doors. But for those of us who I'm in the Milwaukee suburbs, I was actually surprised looking right before this that district, even with the maps before, was like has a history of being pretty blue. What are the Democratic policies that people in that area are really drawn to, and why has it been mostly blue?
Well, we have the city of Superior, which is a strong union city. I mean, that city is built by union labor, and unions vote Democratic because they know the Democratic Party is taking care of them. It's a working class party. And so that's a big part of that. On the eastern part of the district, we have a strong environmental element, but we also have two tribes. We have Bad River and Red Cliff in the 73rd. And so, you know, Native groups are and Native populations vote for Democrats overwhelmingly, and they vote in huge numbers. And they do that because the concerns of the environment, the concerns of working class people are concerns that these populations tend to hold. And so that's really, you know, these two parts of the district have some slightly different elements, but they are strongly blue and have been for decades.
Yeah, and I think kind of building off of that too, the environmental piece, I imagine being so close to the lake, which, I mean, I'm in Green Bay, it's hard to deny our love for Lake Michigan, but if you go to Lake Superior, it kind of changes you. So on that, if you could talk a little about the passion, and I'm sure a lot of voting that happens because of, you know, protecting our waters and the effects of PFAS and everything else. I imagine that's a really, really big issue in your district as well.
It's huge. I mean, protecting the lake is the number one issue in my campaign because it's the number one issue in this district. And it's the thing that most unites us, people from Superior all the way to Bad River. The lake connects us. And we live here in part because we love the lake, we love the woods, and we know it's our responsibility to protect it. If the people of the 73rd don't protect Lake Superior, no one else is going to. And there are so many threats. I mean, from PFAS, forever chemicals getting into our water supply, to a lot of this industrial infrastructure that's along the lakeshore that is routinely dumping or spilling chemicals into the lake, or could, the threat of that. I mean, this is something that we all take so seriously. Lake Superior is 10% of the world's fresh water. And we take it as our personal sort of obligation to make sure that we protect that.
And I love what you said, that it is the number one issue in your campaign because it is the number one issue among voters in your district. That is the kind of representative we want to elect people. They are supposed to be working for the people in the district. So it's just music to our ears. Are there any other big policy things you're hearing, especially as it relates to kind of some more national stuff and the top of the ticket? What are you hearing when you're talking to folks up there?
Reproductive freedom comes up all the time. And it comes up in ways and places that you may not expect. When I knock on a door and it's a 20-something woman, it's no surprise that that's a concern. But what's amazing is when I knock on a door and literally I had a 94-year-old woman say, I cannot believe that women don't have rights over their own bodies, or men in their 60s or 30s or 40s. And so reproductive freedom is absolutely a huge concern. But another one that's really big in this region is public school funding. The city of Superior and the city of Ashland are at the floor of what's allowable for per pupil spending. And our public school funding system is completely broken. And a lot of people are discontent about our public schools. But what I think too few people realize is it's definitely not the fault of teachers. It's definitely not the fault of kids. And often it's not even the fault of administrators or school boards. The legislature is the most broken part of our public school system, and we have to fix it. And legislators have to take responsibility for this. I mean, this is our job to actually figure out school funding, and we haven't done the job.
No,
that's why people need to be replaced.
it's something that has been punted for an extremely long time, and where hopefully these new lines will get us started. Angela, we didn't even get time to talk about, say, the Apostle Islands National Park proposal, though that's more of a Tom Tiffany bad idea that we'll save for another time. But at least folks know about the Assembly District, the issues that are involved, and that they can reach out at stroudforwisconsin.com to learn more. Angela, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Nicole, Kate, always so great. Can't wait to see what you guys do next. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thanks, you too.
We're going to have Luke Mathers coming in here next to tell us what else to expect along the Civic Media Radio Network. Right after this, you're up north.
She is kind and she understands.
Couldn't resist a little Bob Newhart music on what would have been his 95th birthday. Luke Mathers is with us now as we wrap things up on Up North News Radio for this Thursday morning. Mr. Mathers, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Krylo. How are you doing? You're sounding pretty good.
I'm getting there. Yeah. This has been annoying, as anybody who works in broadcasting, when you've got anything related mm-hmm. to a sore throat, or if you're stuffy, or if you get a big sunburn if you're on TV, there's all kinds of things that can just get to be really annoying and get in the way of your work. But you don't let anything stop you, including what all is going on behind you here. I've been watching the evolution of your home office.
It's a little chaotic around here. Sorry. It's okay.
It's
been a hectic week. So
I don't mind. I just figure I'm not anti-mess. I'm pro-story. I figure every mess has a story. So.
Not a good one, I guess, in this instance. Just hectic individuals running around from the Labor Day weekend, getting ready. We're going to be going on a little bit of a vacation ourselves. So it's,
I tilt my camera down to show that what looks nice from the waist up.
There you go.
Waist down on the floor here.
It was Zoom equivalent. Pat just throws garbage on the floor. He's like, okay, yep. It's out of camera sight, so it's not a problem.
I made this place spotless before I left for the Democratic convention. And within hours of coming back, Sherry takes a look in the office and goes, oh, you're home. Because there's just little piles of things all over the office floor. So it is what it is. So, hey, we get to pass along some changes, some nice big news and announcements for the Civic Media family announced yesterday, some changes in the afternoon. And, I'm very happy to hear about a familiar face who's going to continue to become familiar as part of afternoons here on the radio network.
Yeah, Civic Media was pleased to announce yesterday afternoon that the Dominic Salvia Show will be taking over the airwaves from 4 to 6 p.m. So I want to thank Mr. Earl Ingram and Mr. Todd Alba, who are going to be the individuals helping fill in that 4 to 6 slot this week. But starting Monday, September 9th, the Dom Salvia Show, Dom, formerly of one of the co-hosts from the Devil's Advocates radio show, going to be taking over that time slot across the Civic Media radio network. So we're really excited for Dom. He's got an iconic laugh. He's got a great take on a number of different issues. And it's going to be very exciting to see what he does in that new time slot from 4 to 6 p.m. And you can count on a rotating cast of Civic Media hosts that and commentators that will be joining him as well in that new time slot. Well, same time slot, but new name on the rebrand. So.
That's fantastic. I don't know if he doesn't strike me as an early riser, so I don't know if we're adding him to the stable of guests from Civic Media at 7:50 in the morning. But Dom, if you are up this early and listening, you know the door is open. 855-75-CIVIC.
I think you have a better chance of catching him if he's still out from the night before at that at the 6:06 block rather than the 7:50 early riser block of getting up in the morning.
You know, we laugh, we kid about that, but the fact of the matter is that's the only time we got Mike Clemens on was when he was wrapping up what was going on in Vegas. There was something out there, and he was finally wrapping up coverage of it. And could come on at 6:06 a.m. before he goes to bed. I'm just like, all right, I can do that. I can handle that. I can.
You got the time change there, too, so it wasn't that late for him. It was more like, probably 4 or 5 in the morning rather than 6.
Yeah.
But it worked out. But yeah, all kidding aside, I mean, Dom's a very, very hardworking individual, so he's got a number of things. He might be an early riser. I just don't know exactly his schedule. But we'll be thrilled to have him on the airwaves across the Civic Media radio network from 4 to 6 p.m. And beginning on Monday, the Dom Salvia Show. You're going to want to tune in.
All right. Luke is the one that keeps an eye on any changes to the schedule, which would include for sports this week. I know I've mentioned it several times, but you don't want people to miss something, especially if you're a Brewers fan. Your little paper schedule might say that Friday's game, tomorrow's game against Colorado, first pitch is at 7:10. Nay, nay. Thanks to the Packers, that first pitch has moved up a couple hours.
Yeah, so we got the Green Bay Packers on several different Civic Media stations as well. So if you're up in the Northwoods listening on 98Q Country, you can catch the Packers there. Also in southeastern Wisconsin on WRJN in Racine and Kenosha, as well as in southwestern Wisconsin on WRCO. So you can tune in for your Green Bay Packers on the Civic Media airwaves in the three different corners of the state of Wisconsin. And speaking of southwestern Wisconsin, we'll also be covering the president's visit to southwest Wisconsin this afternoon across the Civic Media network. So you can check out, we're expecting remarks to begin about 3 p.m. this afternoon. And we will bring those remarks from the president live across the News Talk radio stations here at Civic Media when the president speaks in Westby, Wisconsin this afternoon.
How? I just want to know, how do you do this, Luke Mathers? We've got all these sports. Now you're covering real news as the president visits. How do you do all that sitting so calmly with your cup of coffee?
It's a lot of coffee, and it kind of is the story of the chaos behind me as well.
That does kind of
explain. And a beautiful puppers to help you out.
Yep. Aurora popped her head over. She's exploring and going around this morning too.
Oh, did I miss Aurora? Was there an Aurora sighting?
It was a very quick glimpse of I think the back of her ear, and that was about it.
Pat, if you want, I can just show you a picture of my dog if you want. I got one right here.
Yeah. Of course I do. Yes.
I'm just kidding. It looks terrible on camera. I'm sorry. Just want to talk about my dog.
See, we got to find the time, Greg, for just a whole dog radio hour. It's got to happen eventually.
Pupper talk. Yes, I like that. And of course, with the president coming today, it's not just about, hey, look at me, look the cool stuff I did. He's not done yet. He's going to be announcing in Westby today $7 billion in investments for 16 different electric cooperatives to provide electricity for rural areas across 23 states and help bring down the cost of internet connections. Infrastructure investments still very much a thing all across Wisconsin, Mr. Mathers.
Yeah, and so it is a ongoing rollout from the Inflation Reduction Act as well as the bipartisan infrastructure law. So there is just a ton of investment coming to communities like Westby, not only here in Wisconsin, but around the entire country. And it's going to be very transformative for those communities. And it's very exciting to see the president coming to Wisconsin, and we get to cover it and have that opportunity to cover it here on Civic Media.
Transformative, talking about rural electricity. I see what you did there. I see what you didn't mean to do there, but you did it anyway. So that was very cool. Luke Mathers, thank you so much. Appreciate all the civic media updates. As always, have a great day.
You as well, Pat. Always a pleasure.
Mr. Bach, what are we going to hear from Matt and Air on Air with Greg Bach?
Today we got Dr. Kristen Lilley at 10:33, as well as J.R. Radcliffe talking sports at 11:33, and Weather and Wine with Brittany Merlot at 11:50, plus another edition of This Should Not Be a Thing at 11:20.
This should not be a thing. Didn't you do something with J.D. Vance yesterday?
Yeah, we asked all of the question, is J.D. Vance okay? And the answer is no.
No.
And his supporters are less good.
And the child care comment, just the most recent example. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us today. Thanks to you as well for joining us on Up North News Radio, brought to you by Courier Newsroom on this Thursday morning. We'll see you tomorrow here up north.